Welcome to Not Shallow. I'm Rebecca Collins. It's November and a lot of the leaves are off the trees. I tried collecting some of them the other day because I just thought they were pretty. And I forgot to press them in a book, which is really Leaf Collection 101. And so a couple days later, they were all curled up and I ended up throwing them in the garbage, which I felt a little bad about. I wonder if anyone out there really has a leaf collection anymore. I was forced to have one once in like seventh grade. We had to go around and collect leaves and put them into some kind of book. And I'm sure there was a tally, a number you had to reach of different kind of trees. I think our teacher thought that we'd take our time and have a leisurely stroll around the neighborhoods collecting leaves. But I mean, come on, everybody left it until the weekend before. I remember scampering around trying to find my leaves. And then there was no time to press them correctly. You just had to tape them in to construction paper or whatever. Who's ever going to go back to a leaf collection and page through it and say, you know, oh, this fiery maple leaf from 1997. Oh, what a beautiful birch leaf I collected in 2002. I just don't think life works that way. But how does life work? That's a good question. And it's sort of what this episode is about in that it attempts to answer some of life's big questions. So it's not shallow. This isn't about what's the meaning of life or why are we here. No, the burning questions I've decided to tackle are, what does it take to become a regular at a neighborhood bar? What movies do I need to see this fall? And who's more country? Me and my sister Sarah or Keith? If it all sounds kind of confusing, it is. But then again, life is pretty darn confusing sometimes. Hopefully, this episode will help you start to sort it all out.
Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name.
Not many songs can send chills up my spine like that one can. That's right, the theme song from the TV show Cheers. I was a huge fan of this show when I was a kid, and just hearing the opening notes sends me into waves of nostalgia for something that I've never actually even had, which is a group of friends at a neighborhood bar. My neighborhood bar is two blocks from my house in Minneapolis, and it used to be called Westrum's Tavern, but then it shut down and was closed for a while, and it reopened several years ago already as the Driftwood Char Bar. For some reason, that name never sticks for me, and so I end up calling it the Tumbleweed. I go past the Driftwood several times a day as I go back and forth running errands, generally going about my life business. And I've been there a few times for different occasions. I'm nowhere near regular status, of course, but this started me wondering, what would it take to be considered a regular at this bar or any neighborhood bar? On a recent Friday night, I arranged to go over to the Driftwood during happy hour. I'd made contact with the guy who books all the entertainment for the bar. His name is Larry, and I contacted him through Facebook. He's a really nice guy. He's affable. He used to play in local bands, and he is very responsive on Facebook. And I asked him if he would serve as my spirit guide to the Driftwood and introduce me to some regulars so I could ask them my question, my burning question about how to become one of them. And he said, sure. The thing you should know about my neighborhood in South Minneapolis is that it's very liberal. During elections, it's rare to see any signs in yards for Republican candidates, and the neighborhood where I live has been gentrifying like crazy over the past 10 years. When we bought our house, the only restaurant within walking distance was a diner that's kind of along the lines of a privately owned Perkins. It's beloved in the neighborhood, but it's definitely not hip. And now there's half a dozen or more restaurants that we can walk to, and some of them are very trendy. And there's a studio for kettlebells, but there's also an old record shop, and there's a farmer's market every Sunday where you can buy falafel and mini donuts and vegetables. But there's also an unmarked building that's the offices for Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. So what I'm saying is, it's kind of a neighborhood in transition. In the middle of all this, there's the Driftwood. It really is a neighborhood bar. The bar from Cheers looks upscale when compared with its interior. There's no dark wood paneling or wraparound bar here. No Sam Malone, unfortunately. But there's a pool table, there's pull tabs, and there's a small stage for music and a kitchen that turns out burgers and fries and the like, thus the char bar part of the equation. There are hardcore regulars at this bar. One of my neighbors, who is very reclusive, is actually one of them. I don't think there's ever a day after work when I don't see him walking down to the Driftwood. There's also a man that we call Old Greg, who's gone through three or four cars in the time since we first started noticing him, because he keeps crashing them, I think on his way home from the Driftwood, even though he lives only three or four blocks away. But you'll see him driving there, and then a couple days later you'll notice that his front grill is hanging off or his side door is banged in. He's about to be due for yet another new car. The Driftwood regulars are the sorts of people I don't see very much in my neighborhood anymore, which is to say, blue collar and working class. Even they are aware of it, because once I started talking to them on that Friday night, it was among the first things they wanted me to know. After Keith and I met Larry and he finished doing some setup for that night's live music, he walked me over to the bar and made an announcement, I like to think at the top of his voice, which is how it felt to me, and it was something along the lines of, "Hey everyone, this is Rebecca and she's doing a podcast about what it's like to be a regular in a bar. Everyone should talk to her and she's going to record you." There was a whole line of guys hunched over the bar, and not a single one of them so much as turned around to look at me. There was absolutely no reaction. In fact, the way they were sitting on their stools, hunched over their beers with their shoulders practically touching, it reminded me of Arctic penguins circled up to brave the winter storms. There was no way to even wedge my way between them with my recorder. It seems that one way to be a regular is to show up and do your best to then remain anonymous. In other words, one way to be a regular is to never talk about being a regular. To say I felt stupid and insecure standing there is a bit of an understatement. Luckily, a table full of three women and two men who were sitting behind me and who had, of course, heard Larry's announcement, started yelling things about what it took to be a regular at the Driftwood. Things along the lines of being willing to listen to a lot of bullshit. I went over to them and started talking. At first, no one wanted to admit they were a regular, at least not while being recorded, as if it was something shameful. But eventually, I convinced them it was okay for me to turn on my recorder. One thing that I want to point out as you listen to all the recordings I made there is that I am working this room. It may or may not come through to you because I edited out some stuff that was just unbearable for me to listen to, but I am working overtime to get some material from these people.
Okay, so you said you think it's about geographics. What does that mean?
Well, if you live near the bar, you're more likely to become a regular.
Right. What is it about this bar that you like?
It's close to my home.
Is that it? Do you like, what about these guys?
Well, they're okay.
Do you always meet the same people here? Like, are you guys always together here?
No, but we typically see each other.
We're kind of joined at the hip, actually. Kevin and I. He won't say it, but I just did.
You're friends?
Yes.
From the neighborhood. It's a neighborhood bar. It's not trendy. It's not yuppie.
Okay.
It's just a fun bar where good working people who work hard come to hang out and visit.
And they have real food, not fake food.
Okay. Yeah. What's fake food?
Cat's Tap, the Blackbird, the Lowbrow.
Okay.
Anywhere where there's hipsters with founding fathers' beards.
This is a dying breed. It's your local neighborhood bar, and it's a dying breed.
Yeah.
It's like a legion.
And this is the best little bar in South Minneapolis.
So how often do you come here?
Well, it depends on what week. Probably 3-4 times a week.
Oh, you're more like 6 times a week. You
know, well, not this week. I wasn't being alone. Weekend.
But it can be up to 6 times a week, you think? Yeah. Is it a good place to come just to talk and?
Yeah, it's a happy hour.
Yeah, yeah. So how often would I need to come here before I would be a regular? Or am I just not regular material? It's okay.
You seem like a nice lady. You can come here wherever you want. And you're very safer. You know why?
Why?
All the regulars are armed.
Oh, that's not true. They are not armed.
That's not true.
We're all packing. We're all packing heat.
Why?
I will knock you out with my 18-ounce pool cue.
Right. It is a good happy hour.
You still got a pool table.
3 to 6:30. People come here.
Some are not
mealmeater.
Some are 45 calibers.
I'm seeing each other. They want for you to be a regular probably 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
Stop for a happy hour.
Yeah.
Couple. And then you go home, have dinner, be with your family, whatever. But not everyone's back. No one's back.
But no one's
okay,
packing.
You know what? That was an exaggeration, but there are people packing. Yeah. Pick them out.
Well, I think that's true anywhere you go.
Yes.
No, it's not.
Yes, because I we do have too. The right to conceal and carry. I think that's true.
Oh, my God.
Everywhere you go. Everywhere you go.
There's a difference between packing and conceal and carry, Dave.
Now he's leaving. All right, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Some of the things they mention I never really considered before, like that they felt a bit threatened by all the new restaurants coming in, which serves different kind of food, the fake food they talked about, that's more expensive and carefully prepared, men with founding fathers' beards. I thought about and then decided against pointing out that the actual founding fathers were clean-shaven, and that beards weren't really in style until more towards the Civil War. I mean, that wasn't exactly going to endear me to them or anything. In certain ways, to be a regular at the Driftwood is to seek solace from the changing world around you. At one point, one of the men from the table asked me about each restaurant that had opened up in our neighborhood over the past 5 or so years, and whether or not I had ever eaten there, and if I considered myself a regular at any of these places. And I said, no. I don't consider myself a regular at any of these places. And it was just interesting to me that he was really aware of all of these restaurants. And some of them I hadn't even heard of yet because they were pretty new or they had just opened. And so it almost seemed like he kept a map maybe in his living room with push pins on each new hipster establishment that opened, almost as if it was some kind of war. Eventually, I got the two oldest and dedicated regulars to talk to me. This is because Larry came back around and intervened. One said he didn't want me to use his name, but he was really affable and more than willing to talk. And he said he's been coming to the Driftwood for 35 years.
So, and you said you've been coming here for 35 years?
Yes.
That's when it was Westrum's, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What do you like about this place?
It's just very friendly, and I get a lot of friends that hang out here, so I come here every day.
Yeah, every day?
Every day.
Do you think that's what makes a good regular? How often do you need to come to be a regular?
Well, I don't know. I come 7 days a week. To be a regular, I guess 4? I don't know.
So, if I started coming here, how long would you need to see me before you thought, oh, yeah, it's Rebecca, she's a regular?
3 to 4 times a week.
Okay. All right. So Do you like the, what do you like this kind of atmosphere as opposed to some other places in town?
Absolutely. It's very low key. There's, it's cheap and there's not a lot of excitement.
There isn't?
Not really. I mean, I'm looking down the bar right now and everybody here comes here 7 days a week.
Okay. And so you feel like you know these guys pretty well?
I've known them all for 30 years.
Really?
Some of them. Not all of them. Most of them for 30 years.
Yeah. So do you ever see each other outside of the bar?
Yes, I do.
So they're really your friends. They're like your friends.
Yeah, we have parties together. We have... We all belong to a NASCAR racing league, and every Sunday we have a party at somebody's house.
Cool.
This Sunday it's my house.
Oh, so you're not going to be here on Sunday?
Yes, I will. After the NASCAR race, we will all
You all come here. Okay.
Yes, and we'll watch football.
Okay. If you missed enough days, how long would you have to miss coming here before someone would call to find out what happened?
If I'm not here for 2 days, they know I'm in the hospital.
Yeah. So... They care about you.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Everybody does. I'm best friends with everybody here.
Oh, well, that's really nice.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. Do you think that people get the same kind of feeling at other bars around here?
I highly doubt it.
No. It's more just coming.
I mean, we've all been here since it was Westrum's, and we've been here a long time.
Yeah.
Not many as long as me, but... It's all cool.
So you think you'll be coming here for the rest of your life?
No, just until I retire.
Oh, then where are you going?
South Carolina.
South Carolina. Where in South Carolina?
Myrtle Beach.
Myrtle Beach. All right. I was down there for a while.
I love it.
Yeah. Do you golf?
No, I don't.
Oh. Well, that's why people always go to Myrtle Beach. They're always golfing.
I love NASCAR, but I just love that area, so I'm moving there so I can follow the NASCAR circuit.
Oh, all right.
The other regular, Timmy O, was considered the granddaddy of the group, the OG, with a record of 37 years of attendance. It took some cajoling on the part of some other regulars to get him to talk to me, but eventually he gave in.
Timmy O.
All right, so 37 years. Right?
Something like that.
Something like that? Okay. So what do you like about this place?
Neighborhood bar.
Okay.
Camaraderie. And the the neighborhood bar, the closeness,
right.
Yeah.
So do you consider these guys to be like your best friends?
Of all the best friends I have in the world, they're certainly one of them.
Okay. All right. So you're here 7 days a week?
No.
No. Oh, he was... Okay, he was here 7 days. How many days a week do you come?
About 10 days a week.
Okay. Okay. So that sometimes you double up. You're here twice a day.
I'm joking with
that. I know. Okay, so what does it take, in your opinion, what does it take to be a regular?
That's the camaraderie, the BS, and how they're going, and how things are, how's everybody doing?
Yeah. So if someone new shows up here, how long does it take for you guys to kind of accept them?
It all depends.
Yeah. On their attitude and how funny they are, maybe? What wins you over?
Nothing wins me over.
No, nothing.
But it's just it's how I feel in a day in a life.
Oh, okay.
You know.
All right.
So I mean, if I have two of these waters, I feel better and I'll converse better.
Okay. What's your usual drink?
I call it, it's an MGD.
Yeah.
I call it my goddamn beer.
Okay. Is it always the same?
Yes.
All right.
Unless it's, they're out of it.
Oh. How could they ever run out of it? It's like the staple.
They have.
All right. So do you plan to come here forever?
Until I D-I-E.
Uh-oh. All right.
Then no, I'm just joking with that one.
Until you retire?
Until I DIE.
Yeah.
That's when I retire.
Okay. All right. Gotcha.
Finally, I cornered Larry himself on the question of what it takes to be a regular at the Driftwood. He was helping the first band of the night load in. As I mentioned before, Larry books all the bands at the bar, and he told us that it's his policy to answer every single inquiry from a band or performer because he knows what it's like to be ignored, as if you're not cool enough, from his own days of being in a band. Here's what Larry had to say.
How many times a week would I need to come here, and for how long before I would be a regular?
Are you coming to see me, or?
No, I'm just coming in here and I'm drinking.
Oh, I thought you meant you were one of my regular customers. I'm sorry. Well, that's up to you. Whenever you're comfortable coming here, you come here, and then you'll be a regular.
But how often?
But see, you have a definition for everything. I have a non-definition for everything. I live in the moment, which is right now.
Okay. All right. So if I say right now I'm a regular, I am.
Yes, you are.
All right.
Welcome, Rebecca.
Thank you.
So here's what I've determined. If you want to be a regular at a bar like the Driftwood, I think you need to go at least 3 to 4 times per week. Regardless of what Larry might say, I think you need to put in the face time. I mean, if you can swing it, 6 or 7 days a week would be better. And you should probably go in on your own. Coming in with an entourage isn't going to impress anyone. Have a seat at the bar and have a beer. Don't have a Newcastle, though. Go for MGD. That's Miller Genuine Draft. Or, if you're Timmy O, my goddamn beer. Or have a Bud Light. It's important that you don't have anything to prove. It's not sticking out, but blending in that earns you friends as a regular. In other words, dare to be average. Have a sense of humor about yourself. And let's be honest, it helps if your politics, if you care to share them, are a bit more on the conservative side. And maybe shave off that founding father's beard. By the time I was ready to go, the women from the first table seemed to have finally grown used to my presence. One of them stopped me to ask me if this was going to be on the radio, and so I explained to her what a podcast is. And then another one reiterated that the Driftwood is a nice neighborhood bar, friendly. That's what she likes about it, regardless of whether or not anyone is actually packing heat. As we finally moved towards the door, ready to leave, a third woman at the table called out to us, "See you tomorrow."
Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You wanna be where you can see, troubles are all the same. You wanna be where everybody knows your name.
So I'm here with my friend Katie. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
And she's here to help us answer one of the burning questions. I think it's always becomes a burning question every fall. It's what movies should I see and what are some of the top Oscar contenders? And so I asked Katie to come because she's probably one of the people I know who's the most into movies. And
so
also,
nice.
Who also just loves the Oscars, like off the charts.
I do. My parents are really into movies, so okay. From a very young age, we were at the movies all the time. Like when we went to see Boogie Nights in high school.
With your
together
parents?
With my parents.
No.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Did you want to leave?
Yes.
Were you uncomfortable?
Yes.
Yeah. You might not know this movie. I don't know. But when I was in sixth grade, my parents took me to see The Cotton Club.
Oh, I don't know that movie.
That is not a movie to see. A, when you're in sixth grade, and B, with your parents.
Oh,
and I remember I told my sixth grade teacher I went to see it with my parents, and he was really horrified. And that's when I really got it. I was like, that was weird.
Yeah.
But my parents took me to see like adult movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did yours too?
Yeah, all the time. We my dad's a big Hitchcock fan, so a lot of Hitchcock movies growing up. And
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's fun. I think that's where it started.
Yeah. So you've selected the movies that you think that we should all see this fall and that will be in the Oscar race.
I think so. Believe it or not, even though the Oscars are not, nominations aren't even coming out until January 12th.
It's
I think
around the corner.
Or 14th. January 14th.
Just around the corner. Come on. You know it.
But they're already, I think it's with all the film festivals, Cannes and all that is where like the buzz starts.
Right.
Popping up.
Okay, so what's your first pick?
First, I'm going in order of most, like, soonest release date to latest.
Okay.
So these are three picks. But the one that's coming up next would be Carol, opening November 20th.
I have heard of this, but tell us the details.
Yeah, Cate Blanchett, love her. She won one for Blue Jasmine.
I love her.
She's incredible.
Yes.
I think she's great. Rooney Mara is in it also.
Okay.
She was in the American version of Girl with a Dragon
Tattoo. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's really just a love story between the shop girl at a department store who's played by Rooney Mara. And then Cate Blanchett is a married woman.
Oh.
So they have this taboo love affair and it's the 1950s.
Is this like
New
a Patricia Highsmith?
It is. Okay. Yes, you're right.
Because this sounds like a lot. Like, so she did The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yes.
Which Cate Blanchett
was
in. And she was fabulous in it.
Yes. So you're right. So Patricia Highsmith wrote The Talented Mr. Ripley and The Price of Salt, I think, is the name of the book that Carol is based on.
Cool.
And she also wrote Strangers on a Train, which
I
didn't even know that was a book, but I love that movie. So I should go back and read some of her
stuff. Yeah, she's amazing. So they fall in love. They have
do.
Does it go bad? Let me guess. Does it take a wrong turn somewhere?
Man, I don't know. I hope it has a happy ending. I think from what I've read and seen, Cate Blanchett has a child, and I think there's some... has to keep up the facade of being married.
Well, right, it's the
50s. The 50s to keep custody of her child. So I honestly don't know what the ending's going to be. This trailer did not tell me what the ending was going to be.
This does seem like big Oscar bait, doesn't it?
For sure.
I mean, come on. You know, it's a period piece. Cate Blanchett, Rooney Mara. Who directed it?
Who did direct it? Oh, Todd Haynes. I'm Not There. So that's... one movie he worked on Cate Blanchett with, but I think the preview just gave me goosebumps because of just visually how beautiful it is.
Beautiful.
It's, you know, 50s.
Yes.
Gorgeous clothes.
All right. I'm seeing it. I'm sold.
Even though
sold.
I think they filmed it in Cincinnati and not New York City.
Oh, well.
Which is funny.
You gotta go where it's cheap, right?
Yeah.
When does it come out?
November 20th.
Yeah. November 20th. So we're talking Thanksgiving movie, people.
Yeah.
Get there.
Bring the fam.
or maybe
get
not.
There.
Yeah, that would be good. That'd be good.
Or go by yourself. That's so fun, too.
Yeah.
I love going to the movies by myself.
I haven't been to the movies by myself for a very long time, but I think I need to go.
Yeah.
I think, I remember my favorite movie I ever saw alone was Good Will Hunting.
Oh, yeah.
I just went one afternoon, didn't know what I was getting into, like, had no idea, hadn't read anything, and just thought it was like the best.
Yeah. And it's really freeing, especially when it's a movie that you are really wanting to see, but you can't, like, find anyone to go with, or like, nothing's working out.
Just
and then
go by
it's
yourself.
Like, you just go.
Yeah.
And once the lights go down, so it doesn't matter that you're by yourself.
I kind of have a pet peeve that I've never shared before, and that's that when I'm walking out of a movie, I don't really like the person that I'm with to say, so what'd you think? it's hard for me to like formulate my thoughts. I'm like, it seems like a little early, but then you should get into the discussion, but it's almost like you're breaking back into reality where you know, you watch the story that seemed real. Then someone wants you to like give your assessment right away. Like, what'd you think? Did you like it?
Right.
And that's always a little bit hard for me. Okay, so what's your second pick?
Number two is The Danish Girl. It is starring Eddie Redmayne, who...
Oh, wait!
He just won the Best Actor Oscar for Theory of Everything.
We
which
all know
I
how you feel about that movie.
Pretty much wept like throughout that entire movie. And I was trying to think today, like, what is it about his acting that, like, gets to me? And I don't know, it's like he's so emotional in that role, and then... I'm feeling it too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So what's this movie about?
So he plays a Danish painter named Lily Elbe or Elba. Oh. So it takes place in Copenhagen.
Okay.
And this painter was born male, but then transitioned to a female. And this was in the 1920s. So 1920s Copenhagen. Whoa. Again, just the preview's beautiful. But her surgery was really experimental at the time because it was
I would think so.
So early in the 20th century. So it's considered to be one of the first, kind of one of the first surgeries of its kind.
Okay.
In the beginning of the movie, he's married to a woman. And I've never heard of this actress. Oh, I didn't write it down. I can't remember her name. Alicia something. The trailer's great, and the pictures I've seen of Eddie Redmayne in this role is just incredible. I don't know.
So it's a journey.
I almost got a little teary during the preview.
It's a journey. Oh, no. You're going to go there and just cry. Maybe this is the one you should see alone.
Maybe.
Just you and some Kleenex.
It's kind of embarrassing to cry when you're with somebody at the movies.
Well,
I try to hide it sometimes, but I shouldn't.
Yeah.
I should just own it.
Like, just openly.
Isn't that the way that you fully
just openly
a movie?
Weep? Yeah. I don't remember the last movie where I just openly was just breaking down. I think maybe I need to have that experience again.
What about Up?
Moving. I saw it again at home and had the same exact reaction.
Yeah.
Like, I cried in the theater and then I cried at home. I can't get through it. If you don't feel anything while you're watching the opening of Up, I think I might have to ask if you're a robot.
You might be a robot.
You might be a robot. Yeah. So this is about just his journey to becoming a woman.
Yes.
Okay. In the 1920s. So that's really interesting. Yeah.
I think so. It looks good.
Total Oscar bait, though.
Oh,
come on.
So, yes. Well, all the you transgender have to, yeah. movement is, yes. It's... fortunately becoming like a bigger part of TV. And this is certainly not the first movie or TV to deal with this topic, but
I think it's interesting that we used to have these really kind of weird portrayals of trans, like I'm thinking of like The Crying Game, where it was like, ooh, this is the big reveal at the end, and now it's kind of like, okay, let's have a real story with like some emotional heft to it. This isn't just like a freak or a monster or something, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
yeah, what was the emotional
not
toll, but was what were the, all those emotions going on for that couple as they were doing that?
Yeah, sounds good. So wait, when does this one come out?
November 27th.
Okay, so also kind of a Thanksgiving movie.
Yeah.
Okay, what's all moving on to number three?
Number three is Joy.
Joy.
Starring Jennifer Lawrence, or I think for the rest of this discussion, we should refer to her as J-Law.
J-Law. Oh my gosh. I do like her.
I like her too.
She's pretty talented. Yeah.
I really like her.
Did you see her in Winter's Bone?
Yes. Loved that movie.
So I saw that at the theater, which I don't know how I ended up there. I hadn't heard anything about that movie either. But I was just like blown away by her. And it's like one of those weird things where you see someone like that and you're like, oh, yes, they're going to be a star. Like you just know because they're such a good actor or actress. Yeah. And definitely has been what happened to her. I think sometimes I am a little jealous of her because she's like, super fabulous.
She's 25.
I know she's 25,
and she already
multi-millionaire.
Is one Oscar.
I know. Oscar. So sometimes, but then again, like she's good at what she does.
So David O. Russell's directing. This is their third movie together. So they've worked with each other a couple times. She plays a woman named Joy Mangano who invented the Miracle Mop. In 1990.
Oh,
and she's just this big, just an entrepreneur. And what I am excited the most about for this movie is that it's just a sweeping epic. Like it follows her from like age 10 to 40. So
hey,
it's kind
that's
of this
pretty
like
cool.
epic tale. She's a single mom raising three kids, which is really good Oscar bait. Like that's Oscar gold. Oscar gold.
Yeah, that's like Aaron Brockovich territory, right?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds pretty cool.
So I think Bradley Cooper's in it. De Niro.
Of course. What is the deal with her and Bradley Cooper?
I know.
Why are they in so many movies? Well, they're in David O. Russell movies together.
Yeah, I'm excited to learn about her.
When does that one come out? Is that a Christmas?
It's on Christmas.
Christmas.
Yep. December 25th. Joy.
Okay. Joy. I'm going to check it out. So we're going to be busy.
So busy.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that you should come back. Do you want to come back
before Oscar nominations come out and make your official picks, or maybe right before the Oscars, you could make your picks and go on record what you got.
Think about that. Both of those would be fun.
All right.
I do think if I had to make one call right now,
okay,
for one of the
here
best actor nominees,
okay,
it would be Johnny Depp in Black Mass, which is all about.
Have you seen this?
I did.
Oh,
Whitey Bulger.
Oh, was it good?
Big gangster in Boston. I grew up.
Oh yeah.
There. So, and honestly, when I was a kid, I don't remember a lot of that being in the news, probably because I was a kid. But Johnny Depp is unrecognizable. I just couldn't even.
So
there were times where it's like when you're, I think that's so magical when you're looking at an actor and
you can't tell.
You don't know who that is, especially for someone like Johnny Depp who's so recognizable.
Right. So would you recommend this movie?
I would.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
One of the big questions that's brewed in my house for many years between Keith and I is, who grew up more country?
Country strong.
That's right. Who's more country strong? So today we're taking this debate to the podcast here. It's Sarah, my sister Sarah, and I. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
Against Keith.
Yo.
To answer the question, who's more country strong? And we've all got our talking points. We're all going to try to win points. So we'll set the stage just by saying that Sarah and I grew up in northeastern Wisconsin on a produce farm. So ding, 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 1 point.
I grew up in a town that defined itself as being a country mile north of Omaha.
Okay, but you didn't live on a farm.
I lived a block away from a farm.
I don't think that gets any points.
There was
do
a
you?
Feedlot right there. The
not
smell
gonna get
was there. The mooing. I used to take my dog for a walk a block away. And
oh, you walked your dog? Why would you do that? Why didn't you just let your dogs roam free?
That's what we did.
And then they would get lost and you would spend an hour calling for them. And they would come racing back with their hair covered in weeds and pickers. How about that?
Well, we had to actually alternate letting our dogs out. We had two, and they had to alternate days that they got out, because if they were out together, they would be gone. They would, it was that pack mentality. They would run off together.
We had tough country sheriffs in Blair. Johnny Law wouldn't let us just let our dogs loose.
Oh, we didn't have any law.
We were lawless.
We took law into our own hands out there.
Okay. That might make you more frontier, but that doesn't make you more country.
All right, so who wants to... That's just the warm-up. Who wants to throw out the first point?
Of the three of us, I'm pretty sure I'm the only one who has seen Hank Williams Jr. in concert.
Oh, well, I saw Loretta Lynn.
We all did.
Yeah.
We went
adults,
together.
I don't think that counts.
Oh, oops.
Okay, we didn't.
We didn't go to concerts because we couldn't get to concerts. There were no concerts in our area, except once a year, the Wisconsin Singers would come to Pickard Auditorium.
Well,
oh, and Up With People. Yeah. And I had the Up With People poster.
We both did.
The Hank Williams Jr. concert was in Omaha, which means that by definition, I drove a country mile to see it.
Okay, you can have a point for that. All right, what do we have?
We had no trash collection because we were out in the country, but we did have burn barrels.
We did call it a burn barrel. Yes.
Was it an old oil drum?
Yes.
Yeah, we had that too.
Okay, did you ever have to burn the trash?
No, I got to burn the trash.
Okay, well, he was a boy.
Did you like burning the trash?
It was a privilege.
Oh,
you know I think you're making that up.
No, I'm not. Mm. You know what the only thing better than burning the trash was?
Burning the trash?
If there was a special...
When it was someone else's turn to burn the trash?
There's a special load that had to go out to the dump, and then we could drive out to the dump and walk around and look for cool stuff.
Well, we burned everything. Our dad burned tires. Yeah,
it's a dirty secret.
A dirty secret
family.
That my dad burned tires.
We're not supposed to talk about it.
But we'd have to take turns burning the trash.
It was a weekly job. The week
the collection of trash. You'd go and put it in a big barrel in the garage.
Right. And it would just sit in there until it stunk really. The smell would drive you to, someone would be ordered to burn the trash.
Yeah, one of us.
In the winter, it wasn't our problem.
No, because we were scholars.
That's where we were at the one-room schoolhouse learning, and the trash wasn't our problem. But in the summer, it was our problem. And I remember Sarah always tried to get out of burning the trash.
It was a horrible job.
Because you'd have to hang out there for a while until you could get all the trash into the burn barrel.
Right,
until
everything burned down enough to just throw another bag on.
Throw another bag on. And then you got the fun of seeing what was going to explode from the heat.
That's right.
So like plastic things. And you could hear things popping.
Yeah.
Maybe throw an aerosol can in there for fun.
It was just an awful job.
Yeah, it sucked.
Well, if you're really country, you enjoyed it.
I think we kind of covered this, but our dog slept outside. Like a house dog was unheard of. Dogs slept in a pen.
We had dog apartheid. So there were dogs that got to go inside and outside, and then one poor dog who just was outside all the time in a pen.
How were those decisions made?
It was chronological, I guess. The outside dog was the oldest, and
well, that should be the dog that sleeps inside, the old one,
I agree, but the country way was.
One thing that happens when you have dogs that are always outside is they go and find things
to roll in, dead animals to roll
or
in,
or to carry back to your yard,
or they kill stuff.
Right.
They spend most of their day killing stuff.
I think so. Yeah. So. You know, we always had like rabbit parts strewn in our lawn. Mm-hmm. A lot of birds.
They're always dead.
It was
birds.
Mostly birds and rabbits. And so then, you know, our yard was so big that when it came time to mow, we had, how many mowers did we have?
We always had at least two. And then at one point we got a riding mower, which was deluxe.
Right. But before that, two people had to mow the lawn, and it was an all-day affair to mow the whole thing. And then you never knew what was left in the grass from the animal parts. Sometimes they'd be hiding in, like, mm-hmm. a longer patch, and then you'd go over it, and all of a sudden you'd hear the blades, and they'd be like, and like something would come flying out of the lawnmower, and like, oh, I think I just ran over a bird.
Yeah, a bird skeleton in the blade was always
there was
a lot of crunching
grinding sounds.
Right.
We were supposed to try to pick those up ahead of time, weren't we? I don't remember. At least the animals, we just left the poop. We never picked up the poop.
No.
A lot of times, you know, there'd be these dried out sun bleached poops in the yard.
That would just go up like dust.
Yeah. So when you ran over those with the mower,
a cloud of dust
would just go into the air.
I do remember one time being kind of young and playing in the sandbox, and one of our dogs had found a nest of baby rabbits.
Aww.
And was systematically killing them. One by one, and bringing each one over to the sandbox to show me. And each one had that, like, would have that baby death cry.
Aww.
And there's just nothing I could do to stop this dog from killing these rabbits. And then I remember one time there was a big dead rabbit, and you and I think we were poking at it with a stick, and we were really. We found like a little rabbit pancreas or something, or rabbit bladder, and we had it on the end of a stick.
Oh. I got nothing there.
You did learn a lot about body
anatomy.
Parts. Yeah, anatomy from all the
dead animals.
Yeah.
So then, which leads me to the time that the neighboring farmer butchered pigs. And like cut them up at our place, and then they buried the pig parts out in the field. That turned into a gigantic cesspool of maggots that I like stumbled upon one day, and I didn't know what it was. So I said to my mom, like, I came running back home, and I was like, "What is it?" And she was like, "Don't go over there. Those are maggots."
Yes.
We had I think you guys might have had this too, but every fall there would just be like deer hanging from the rafters of the garage, sometimes like split open right. So you could like look and see the inside of their rib cage.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, well, my dad did deer processing.
That was his winter job.
Taking it up one notch.
Yeah.
We actually processed other people's deer and would have barrels of deer legs and barrels of deer parts.
Yep.
Sometimes the dog would come running back into the yard with a deer leg looking so pleased. Oh, so pleased.
Like she would be practically leaping in the air. She was so happy.
And then that leg would lay there for a while until somebody picked it up. Not me. All right, what else you got, Keith?
Well, I don't know about you guys. I know that when I was growing up, a very, very popular pastime was to go out into a field with guns and shoot things.
We didn't like guns.
No.
Well, that's not very country.
I mean, we might get a negative point for
that. Negative point that we never played with guns.
We would like save up things to shoot. At one point, my Uncle Lyle and I went out and shot a bunch of old records. You know, you could like.
But you weren't shooting animals.
No, but like clay pigeons or you know, records.
That sounds a little fancy, like skeet shooting.
Well, we called them blue rock. This is 40-year-old, you know, urban me calling them clay pigeons. Back then, it was we're going to go shoot blue rock.
Oh, I see. So also, we never had cable until I almost graduated high school. No cable.
We had the alternate country approach, having way more cable than we needed and way more cable than we could afford. But by God, we're getting cable to the exclusion of other things.
Did you steal cable?
At some points, yes.
Yeah, that's pretty country. Yeah. You gotta steal that cable.
But we couldn't even get the cable.
Yeah, we didn't have access to cable. But I never got to see any of this other stuff on MTV. I think I grew up very deprived.
So at one point in high school, there was a big ruckus in my high school because some prankster kids they had this plan that they were going to hoist a pig onto the roof of the school and cut a hole in the roof or go in through a skylight or something and let the pig loose in the halls. Oh. And they got caught in process of this. They were caught with ladders and a pig, and they got, they got like a week suspension. All of their like fellow FFA kids had this big protest to support them, and so like all the FFA kids would stand across the street for a week. They all skipped school for a week, stood across
for
the street
a week?
With signs saying like,
this is what they cared about.
Yes. The principal's name was Shanahan, and so they'd hold like signs that said like Shanahan equals Hitler. And okay. So I feel like, you know, being part of this, like if you're in a school where this happens and these are the current events, that's pretty country.
Well, so the big controversy in our high school where people got that mad was they took away the student smoking lounge or student smoking area
outside, yeah.
And said that they could only smoke across the street. Not on school grounds. That was a big deal. There were signs. Some people stood outside with signs. It was really pretty sad.
Was there any Hitler on the
sign? No, but they would hold the sign with one hand and smoke with the other. You know? It was like three people.
Well, speaking of high school, my high school story, when I was in high school, I think I was like a sophomore, and it was in the springtime, and I missed the bus, and... You know, I had to go to the payphone and try to call. I knew my mom was at work at her big city job. And I was just hoping that my dad would be around somewhere and that he would be able to come get me and give me a ride. Well, I kept calling and nobody would answer because, you know, we didn't have an answering machine or anything either.
Nope, no answering machine.
Eventually, I just gave up and I was like, I guess I'm going to have to walk it, which was how far, like 3 miles, do you think? Or
maybe four.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't. 5 miles.
Yeah. And I mean, just through country roads.
Country roads.
No sidewalks.
No sidewalks.
So, I'm like, well, I took off. I was wearing my Huarache sandals.
Oh, no, not the Huaraches. There's no support.
I know.
There's no support.
And a skirt. And my Huaraches. I'm making my way. I've gotten maybe halfway home, and it's like, ugh. And Then I see my dad in the field. He's along the way, you know, he had some land that was, you know, along this route, and he was out plowing. He had his tractor and was plowing. And so I got his attention, and he's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I missed the bus." He's like, "All right, get on. I'll take you home." So I had to stand, you know, he's sitting driving the tractor.
There's only one seat on a tractor.
I'm standing on the little ledge next to him holding on, and I got to ride home on the tractor. It beat walking all the rest of the way.
Yeah, but I'm sure you went home at a stately 10 miles an hour. That's as fast
did you wave to passersby?
No, I probably was trying to hide my head because
I think that that thing could get, it could probably get up to 30.
Yeah, maybe. I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah. You know, I didn't want to fall off, though, either. Get crushed under the wheels. That would have been bad. Did you ever have a ride on a tractor?
Yeah.
Oh, all the time. I had a friend, my friend Rich had a cattle farm. And so I'd go out and, like, help him with cattle stuff. And so,
oh, what kind of cattle stuff? Like, you're branding them or something?
Well, okay, I never helped with branding. Most of the time when I helped them, it was, like, moving them from one lot to the other. And so we'd ride around on tractors or four-wheelers and just try to, like, intimidate.
Herd them.
Yeah, like, intimidate them on country roads. Rich and I also would sit down in his basement. You know, they had since they had all these cattle, they'd had cattle prods. And so being teenage boys, we'd just sit and like whap each other with the cattle prod. And that's pretty country.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Okay,
that
fine.
Is pretty country.
Pretty country.
I think maybe we're kind of at a detriment because we're female in country.
What? No.
Well, I think.
Okay, but you haven't gotten any points yet for your membership in 4-H.
Oh.
Or Horseless Horse Club.
Ding.
Horseless Horse Club.
Yeah, Horseless Horse.
For taking things to the county fair.
Yeah, winning a blue ribbon.
Yeah.
That's winning. Pretty what? Country. Horseless Horse.
Of course. my mom canned, froze, and preserved every single thing that she could.
Ding.
That we had 3 or 4 freezers.
Yes.
Full.
Yep. One was for meat.
Deer.
A lot of deer.
That my parents would use venison instead of beef and spaghetti and try to fool us.
Yeah, that was the worst.
And I would know.
Yeah,
I would say, this
they'd
is
always
not
say,
beef.
You can't tell the difference.
They'd say,
like, yes,
this
you
is not
can.
Beef. And they'd say, yeah, it is. And then you'd see the wrapper. It was venison.
Because everything had labels on it.
Yes.
Like, right.
That we were served duck and geese for dinner with the shot still in it that you'd have to spit out.
We had that with pheasant.
Oh, yeah, pheasant.
We had
pheasant too. But did you ever eat squirrel?
No, but I had relatives who did, who lived right next door to us.
I remember squirrel meat, my one encounter with it, which I don't know what we were doing eating that. We did not need to eat that. Did my mom think it would be fun?
I don't know.
What? I think we ate rabbit.
Yeah, we ate rabbit all the time.
I remember it being kind of greasy.
Yeah, what else did we eat? I don't know, but my dad, wasn't he keeping like raccoons in the freezer? Because it wasn't to eat them. It was for the furs. Like he would go and sell, like somebody would buy the furs from him.
I think he kept that a secret from me.
Oh.
I was always,
it
I was
the one,
kid,
it was the freezer in the garage.
I was the kid who couldn't get through an episode of Wild Kingdom without crying. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that those things were kept from me. I think we just racked up a lot of points there. What else you got?
Well, here's the thing. The last thing I've got, I'm wary of playing this card because I know that you guys can play the same card much stronger.
I think I know what it is.
But, you know, I had some very country summer jobs. We'd go out walking beans. We'd ride in the back of a pickup, like 8 or 10 kids in the back of a pickup, ride like 30 miles out into the country with machetes and corn knives and walk up and down rows of beans and cut weeds and maybe you see a jackrabbit in the next row over and you throw your machete at it. And, you know, I've been yelled at by an old farmer saying like, hey, boys, I'm not paying you to grab ass. That's pretty country.
Well, I give you a point for that, except that we were basically working since the time we were like 10 or 11.
Or younger. In the back of the store. Yeah.
Eventually graduating up to cashier. But a lot of years just spent scrubbing vegetables. Ugh. A lot of years.
I think radishes were awful because the leaves...
would give you a rash.
Would give you a rash on your arms because they're scratchy. And then the other thing that was bad was cucumbers. And the water was always so cold. And
yeah.
You would just be freezing.
You could spend an entire day washing cucumbers of different sizes and cukes. Sorting them.
Cukes. Gotta wash the cukes.
Sorting cukes. Sorting cukes. Yeah.
Into ones and twos.
I think you guys win the farm labor. But, I mean, I do. My hands still have tons of little scars from, like, machete fights.
Whose fault is that?
Yeah, that's not...
that's the fault of the farmer who put the machetes in our hands, really.
I just remembered something else, that one time I was playing up in the hayloft of the barn, and I found a perfectly mummified cat. I don't think it still had hair, but it was a mummified... like, it was... intact in every other way and just like solid.
Yeah.
And it had died up there who knows when. Ugh. And I remember like really freaking out and telling my dad, and he just went up there and like pitched it off the hayloft and like put it in a sack or something.
Into the burn barrel.
Like, no biggie. Put that in this week's burn barrel load. I think that you know, it's kind of universally known that if you live in that environment, you're just kind of more acquainted with death.
Yeah.
Even though we didn't live on an animal farm.
Right.
There sure was a lot of death around.
There was. It's just the way things were.
That's right. That's just the way things were.
So I do have one last thing that I had forgotten until just now, actually. You guys grew up in a building that was originally designed to be a house.
Yes.
I... spent the years from, 1982 to 1992 living in a retrofitted corn crib that it had, you know, like a porch and a couple of bedrooms attached and some carpet put down, but it was a corn crib.
Was it round?
No.
Oh.
Like, how do you make a house out of that? Just add to the frame?
Well.
Just add to the frame?
Pretty much.
Did you get it for free?
Yes. That,
A free corn crib.
My great-grandmother lived in it, and when she died, we inherited it, and for some reason left like the actual house that we lived in and moved into the corn crib.
Was it painted? Was it a color?
Yeah. I mean, like, it looked like a house. It looked like a crappy house, but...
I just have this vision of, like, you know, weathered boards, nailed to the frame. And
I'm like... just seeing tar paper and maybe like a few old cobs of corn still hanging around. Did you have toilet paper or did you have to use corn cobs?
Or old Sears robot catalogs.
We got to use corn cobs.
Well, so what do you think? Who is
Oh,
the winner?
Obviously you and I win. Come on. We got it all going on over here.
I think we're all pretty country.
I think we're more country.
Okay. I would like to put it out to the listeners of Not Shallow.
Who's the most country strong?
We're not hard to find on Facebook or Twitter. Track us down. Weigh in.
We'll let the people decide.
Yes.
So there you have it. Wow. We arrived at some answers and some non-answers, didn't we? Just for the record, I haven't been back to the Driftwood yet, but it just so happens that they recently started an open mic night for stand-up comedy, and Keith and I are planning to go. Who knows? In the depths of winter, we might even decide to try our luck up at the mic. I mean, could it be any harder than working the room for this podcast? I kind of doubt it. Anyway, thank you for listening to this episode. I'm trying to cook up something delicious for a very special Thanksgiving episode, so watch for that. Thanksgiving is probably one of my favorite holidays because all you really need to do is make something yummy and then eat it and watch a parade. Until then, thanks for listening. Now go take a walk in the leaves.